This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Look at a map of Wisconsin. You see the peninsula that juts out into Lake Michigan on the eastern side of the state? That's Door County. The Door Peninsula, with Green Bay on the western flank, has been a favorite family getaway destination for more than a century. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me in Door County for an exploration of diverse, timeless attractions. The region's history and development is intimately interconnected with the water, from boat building to bayside and lakeside family-owned and operated resorts. Come along and we'll start our journey at the Door County Maritime Museum, where Carrie Dorsky talks about everything aquatic.
Everything arrived by water, and that's the reason they put in this shipping canal.
And the annual lighthouse festivals held in June and October. At Sherwood Point Lighthouse, Melissa Nick talks about ghostly encounters.
We had unlocked the house so that people could get in, and when the trolley showed up, the door was locked.
Over at Chambers Island Lighthouse, we'll meet the caretaker, who's been greeting visitors there since the 1970s. So what do you do as caretaker of a lighthouse?
A lot of light housekeeping.
Very funny. Greg Sundstrom, fondly known as Fuzzy, manages Fred and Fuzzy's Waterfront Grill on Sister Bay.
One gentleman came for 49 years, and then he finally built a home up here. So he's no longer staying with us, but they're still great friends of ours. And we have a lot of return customers.
At Door Artisan Cheese Company, combined with Glacier Ledge Fine Dining under the same roof, the master cheesemaker talks about exotic cheese-infused culinary dishes that are peninsula favorites.
The chef actually takes some Brussels sprout leaves, and he oven bakes those to get them crispy. And then we melt this Valmy cheese over the top, and we call it Valmy nachos.
You know that you're making me real hungry. John Jarsh with the Visitors Bureau takes us on a ferry boat ride over to Washington Island, located off the northern tip of the Door Peninsula. Jarsh talks about Washington Island's 19th century Icelandic homesteaders, visiting Wisconsin's oldest lighthouse on Rock Island, accessed via a passenger ferry from Washington Island, and other not-to-be-missed year-round Door County experiences. Okay, here we are in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin.
My name is Carrie Dorsky. I'm the Community Engagement Manager. So this is the Door County Maritime Museum. We are celebrating 50 years this year, 2019. Our original location is up in Gills Rock, which is at the tip of the peninsula of Door County. The facility we're sitting at today was built in the mid-90s. And we now have three locations. We actually started running the Kena Island Lighthouse back in the 70s. So nice. We've grown quite a bit in 50 years.
Really, when you think of the history of Sturgeon Bay and Green Bay and the whole peninsula, this whole area, it has everything to do with the water.
We actually named our 50th anniversary The Water Defines Us, the exhibit. So it came out in an interview. One of our board members said, you know, everything here, everything that you see, the tourism, the families here, the business, the economy, everything here revolves around the water. It would be a very different story if we weren't surrounded by it.
Yeah. And it's one of those paradoxes of time and place and the evolution of a society and culture. And that 150 years ago, you were in other waterfront places, outposts, cities, towns, on lakes and rivers and oceans, were much more, they were like on a superhighway, they were on a freeway system.
Exactly, all the goods and services, everything arrived by water, and that's the reason they put in this shipping canal. This didn't used to go all the way through the peninsula, it used to just go partially through, and they put the whole thing in, and now we have those 1,000-foot raiders come right straight through here. It's beautiful.
Yeah, they take out the sunshine when they come through.
They sure do. Both bridges have to go up because there's not 1,000 feet between our bridges. So
that's incredible. Mm-hmm. The reason I came to Wisconsin today has to do with you. Is why is the lighthouse so cherished and treasured?
You know, there are so many stories with lighthouses. There's history, there's drama, there's mystique. There's, you know, somebody wrote a review this morning that called it them spellbinding. There's so much to them, there's so much lore, but I think also the reason we celebrate these lighthouses is, first of all, they save lives, they aid in navigation, and we have one of the highest concentration of lighthouses in the smallest area.
Anywhere in the country.
Anywhere.
Wow.
Which is incredible. Who would think Wisconsin? We don't have an ocean coast, but we are. These are inland seas, and they're very dangerous inland seas. So they're very important, and some of them were successful lighthouses and still aid navigation to this day.
Run by the Coast Guard some, right?
Exactly. But some of the lighthouses here, we have one up in Bailey's Harbor. They call it the Old Birdcage Light, and it actually didn't help things. It ran boats aground. So what they ended up doing in Bailey's Harbor is they put in the range lights, and they have an upper and a lower, and so when the ships come into the harbor, they line those lights up so that they come in safely.
How interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's a
very lighthouse cool one. Causing problems.
Exactly. Yeah, you wouldn't think of it. And so now that one has obviously been decommissioned. It's on a private island, but it's a very cool one to see.
Very cool. And how many days is the Lighthouse Festival?
Our Spring Lighthouse Festival is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then we do a small mini version in October that is just the Saturday and Sunday.
And what do you do when somebody arrives? They typically start out here at the Maritime Museum?
For sure. A lot of people, when they think of a festival, they think of one location with booths and all of these things, but really our festival spans the entire county. Our festival, our home base is here, and we have two lighthouses in Sturgeon Bay, but really we schedule tours throughout the peninsula. So we schedule land-based tours. You can ride a trolley or a bus, and you can see five or six lighthouses in a day. We schedule boat tours so you can see them by water. We schedule adventure tours so you can hike right up and get up and personal in those lighthouses.
Or you could kayak on your own.
Exactly. We've got some kayak tours, and we actually added a new rafting tour this year. Inflatable hard-bottom boats can get you closer via the water than any other vessel.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. And who typically attends the Lighthouse Festival? Is it people obviously from near, but how far?
I sold tickets this morning to somebody who was up here from Atlanta, Georgia. So very far away, near and far. We have locals. I sold a couple tickets to people who've never been to Chambers Island, and they live in Fish Creek, which is right across from it. So.
And another dynamic is the myth and legend and lore of the haunted lighthouses.
Oh my gosh, yes. There's a really great story about a woman named Minnie out at the Sherwood Point Lighthouse. She was an assistant lighthouse keeper and then became the lighthouse keeper.
Long time ago,
yes. Yep.
Melissa, Nick.
And you're a volunteer with the Maritime Museum?
I am the financial systems manager for the Maritime Museum.
Oh my gosh. Buck stops here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right now we are out at Sherwood Point Lighthouse, and I am going to tell you a story. The lighthouse is owned by the United States Coast Guard, and I have to go out to the Coast Guard station and get the keys, basically sign my life away. My husband and I came out here Friday night for the ghost tour last year, and we had unlocked the house so that people could get in, and when the trolley showed up, the door was locked. So we had to reopen the house. We think it's Minnie. She wasn't quite ready to have people in her house yet.
And Minnie was an assistant lighthouse keeper here, 1898, around 1930?
Correct. And she is buried right behind you.
Oh, so she's watching us.
Yes, she is.
So that's interesting, huh?
Yes. So then this year on Friday, we came out and we opened the house, and I have a smaller key. And none of the beds have bedding on them, so I thought maybe I'd try to get into the linen closet and maybe dress the beds. And when I went to put the key in the linen closet, the doorknob turned, and I got a little nervous, so I left.
Wow. So you guys can hardly wait to spend the night here, huh?
I will probably never spend the night here.
By choice.
Correct.
All right, Melissa. Well, thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
Haunted tours of lighthouses. And there are other ones that are haunted, too.
I believe Cana Island has a ghost, but I've not had any experiences out there.
Marianne Blahnik.
Marianne, here we are on a lighthouse island.
We are on Chambers Island, which is in the waters of Green Bay, halfway between the Door County Peninsula, and the Upper Michigan Shore.
You're a lighthouse keeper?
Caretaker.
A caretaker, okay. But you live at a lighthouse?
I do. At the moment, only on weekends, but my husband and I have been the caretakers since 1976 when the Chambers Island Lighthouse was transferred from the United States government to the township of Gibraltar.
So what do you do as caretaker of a lighthouse?
A lot of light housekeeping.
Very funny.
Reason I don't pretend to be a keeper, I don't have to do a single thing with the light. It's on a separate steel tower in the yard. I don't have to polish the brass. I don't have to climb up the tower at night to be sure the light is still lit. I do a lot of lawn mowing, flower gardening, because I prefer being outside in the summer rather than dusting and polishing.
So there's typically a real sense of quietude to your life, a tranquility.
Well, it's funny because, as I say, I do a lot of lawn mowing, so it's not quiet.
Yeah. So you're making some noise.
But... every night the sunset is different and more beautiful than the night before, and a lot of reading time, if I take it. But there's always another task to do. Polish. The only thing I polish is the railing around. The light has been, and the lantern room has been removed from the tower that's attached to the lighthouse itself. And that enables visitors to climb up there and see the view. But the birds love to perch there, too, and they leave a lot of evidence. So I keep that tidied up.
On the tower, it says 1868.
Correct. Last year we celebrated 150 years. The light was first lit on October 1st, 1868.
And how was it fueled at that time, 1868?
No, I don't actually know. I know kerosene at one time in history. I don't believe that they would have brought whale oil all the way in last year. But I don't know that for a fact. I know that the early ones were powered by whale oil.
And was it a Fresnel lens?
It was. It was a fourth order. Everybody wants to know where it is, and that's a bit of a mystery. There is one in a museum in Minden, Nebraska, called Pioneer Village.
I've been there.
And people have seen it so designated, the lantern. But someone once told me that they had seen it, and they were expert in the sizes, and that it was not a fourth order.
Okay.
And there's nothing in the record that said this lighthouse ever had anything other than a fourth order. I believe they said it was sixth order, and I never can remember which way the numbers go in terms of size.
Okay, so it's over 150 years old, and you're out here. You guys are by yourselves at night. Do you ever feel the sense of those who went before you?
My husband did. The first few years that we were out here, he would come the first weekend by himself to open up, and our children were fairly young. And the first night he slept here on a mattress on the floor, he heard footsteps coming down the tower and through the house and out the back door. It sort of unnerved him because nobody had gone up the tower that he was aware of, but it didn't frighten him particularly. And he claims that happened a number of years early on, and then one weekend in the early season, our son was with him, who was maybe in middle school. He woke John up and said, "Do you hear that?" And, "Oh, Dad, go back to sleep." He didn't hear it. But then one night, apparently, our son did hear it. Well, there was at that time a Catholic retreat on the island, and the nuns that worked there were over visiting, and they heard the story, and it upset them that they interpreted a ghost would be a soul that had not found eternal rest. So they placed their hands on the lighthouse wall on the outside and prayed for the release of that soul. And to my knowledge, well, not my knowledge, because I have never experienced it, and people say, "And you're here alone a lot." I'm here alone a lot, and the ghost is, I think you have to believe. I don't know.
But your husband never heard it again.
Never saw it, and I don't believe he ever heard it again. But I'm always curious. People have always been calling who are writing books about it or have heard about it. And when I listen and he's on the phone, it seems to change a little bit with each telling.
He kind of enjoys it.
When he gets off the phone, I'll say, "Do you ever worry about your reputation as an historian?" Because he knows so much history. He's been researching the history of this island since he was 18, and he's 81 yesterday. But he loves an audience, so he loves to tell the ghost story.
All right, well, I should let you go. What a great place to spend some time. It's a part of your life, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is, yeah. And
how many years now?
I have to count on my fingers. Since 1976, uh-huh. And it's now 2019. So we had a nice celebration last Labor Day weekend for the 150th anniversary. The neighbors here had a lease on the lighthouse back in the 50s and 60s, that was. And we have them to thank for it actually still existing, because when they took over, the windows were broken and the door had been broken in, and they restored that. But anyway, somebody on the island said, well, I was at the 100th anniversary. Well, Mrs. Fitzgerald had apparently sent out plates with the invitation marked on it. And somebody on the island, well, they said, and I have a plate, they said, from the 100th. And I thought, oh, a memorial plate. Oh, my goodness, I should try to recreate, blah, blah, blah. So this person still had their invitation plate 50 years later hanging in their garage. And they gave it to me, and I just cracked up because it's a paper plate. I had the exact type of paper plate here at the lighthouse. And so everybody at the birthday party got a paper plate with the image of the lighthouse and the dates for 150. And I said, you're all expected to keep it until the 200th, but I won't be here to check.
I love
so
her.
We had a birthday cake, and Mrs. Fitzgerald cut the cake, and we took pictures. There's a banner my friend made, and every family that was here at the picnic, every island family, got their picture taken with the banner. So
very cool. And if somebody wanted to learn more, is there a website for the lighthouse?
Different people that have lighthouse websites have it posted. We don't have one per se.
In the Door County Maritime Museum?
Maritime Museum, definitely. And there are any number of books. There's one called Door County Islands, or the Islands of Door County by the Burtons, that has a chapter on every island. And there's one about Keepers of the Light, I think it's called, that has a chapter on each of the lighthouses in Door County. My name is Marianne Blahnik, and I'm the caretaker of Chambers Island Lighthouse in Wisconsin.
That does light housekeeping.
Who does light housekeeping?
Are you scared to go out to some of the lighthouses?
You know, there were some ghost hunters out on Cana Island last summer and said they picked up some stuff. I don't know.
Would you spend the night in one?
I don't know if I would, but I will tell you that my friend Jake, who is working on a lighthouse documentary, stayed at Cana Island overnight last summer, and he did not stay in the keeper's quarters of the house. He slept right under that Fresnel lens, way up in the tower at 97 steps. So he's more adventurous than I am.
But maybe he wanted to be safe.
Yeah. Well, and laying under that light while it's flashing all night long, I can't, it sounds so cool.
I don't know how he did it.
I don't either, no. He wanted to get all those beautiful drone shots of the sun coming up, so.
That's so cool. So, a little bit more food, balloons, clowns, I mean, what sort of activities happen?
Eagle Bluff Lighthouse in Peninsula State Park on the bay side of the peninsula. They are doing sunset tours tonight with docents in costume, and they're also doing a small kids' lighthouse festival on their grounds. So we try to work really hard with all the lighthouses in the area. The Bailey's Harbor Range Lights, I told you about just a few minutes ago, they are celebrating their 150th anniversary this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. So
that was the problem child one, right?
No, that was the one that solved the problem.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, but before the old one was near
exactly.
there.
Exactly. When the old one caused the problems, the range lights fixed that problem so those boats could come in safely. They have a great celebration planned this afternoon, coinciding with Lighthouse Festival. So,
would there be a fish boil there too, maybe?
I think they're just catering that in, but there are fish boils. It is Friday night in Door County, so there are fish boils everywhere today.
Okay, so anything you want to add? Now's your time. You know all the secrets.
Lighthouse Festival is my favorite festival. We do three big ones a year, and this is the best one. This is the way you can get out and enjoy this beautiful weather, first of all, see these historic landmarks, and a little bit of history, a little bit of adventure, and a fun fact, the Lakeshore Lighthouse Cruise on the lakeside, all those Bailey's Harbor lighthouses, you also get to see some really cool shipwrecks. And the water is cooperating this weekend, which, you know, cross my fingers. The water is so calm today that you can see those.
So you can see the holes. And,
yes. Yeah. It, under the water, you will go right above them and you'll be able to see it. It's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you do for the rest of the year?
That's a very good question. I have a Classic and Wooden Boat Festival celebrating its 29th year in August. That is a two-day-long kind of more traditional festival. I will have between 30 and 50 old boats, old classic boats here. We will have kids' activities, boat races. We do a really cool thing called the Sikaflex Challenge, where teams will compete with marine glue and plywood.
I know Sikaflex.
Do you?
You don't you don't want to get that on your hands.
No, it will never
you
come
own
off.
It forever.
Nope. So they build those boats in one day, they decorate them the next day, and then we throw them right out here in the canal, and they do a little trial. It's so cool. That's August for me, so that'll be fun.
And then inside, I heard you're building a
yes.
boat that you're going to raffle off. That you every year you build
we sure
a classic
do.
Boat. Tell us about that.
We have a group of great, amazing volunteers who have been building boats here for years, and they take on about 5 students every year. They start in October, they finish in June. They choose a different boat every year so they can learn and try something new. This year they are building a 16-foot St. Lawrence River skiff. It has hand-turned oars. They are debating on a paint color right now, so we'll see what they end up with. But that is our biggest fundraiser of the year. We spend the summer raffling that off. Tickets are $20 a piece, and you can win that huge boat. It comes with a trailer donated by Skipper Buds. We've got a great list of prizes after that. But yeah. I spend my summer out in Door County talking to people. And
not bad.
No, it's beautiful.
Yeah. So it's not a real job because you have too much fun.
I hear that a lot, actually. You know, I spent last weekend at Blessing of the Fleet in Bailey's Harbor. This weekend is Lighthouse Fest. Next weekend is Fearball in Ephraim, the burning of the Winter Witch. So that'll be a fun one. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Okay, so further information to learn more.
Visit our website at dcmm.org. Or you can call the museum. We are happy to chat. It's 920-743-5958. And my name is Carrie Dorsky. I'm the Community Engagement Manager.
Carrie, thank you so much. What a great day in paradise.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure. You go by Fuzzy. But you have a birth name.
Yes, I do. My first name is Greg. But in the 60s and 70s, I had very long and very curly hair. And the nickname started back then, and it stuck with me forever. So 90% of people know me as Fuzzy.
And there's Fred in Fuzzies, right?
Correct. Fred passed away a couple years ago. But
And who was Fred?
Fred was Fred Luber. He bought the resort in 1973, and the original owners ran it for him that year. And then we became his managers in 74, and then in 75 we became partners with Fred.
Pretty young then, right? You're not too far out of high school.
My wife and I were 19 and 20. So yes, we were very young. And
young enough to not have any fear, right?
Well, that, and also my dad and I had done carpet work on Fred's house the year summer before. So he knew us a little bit and knew that I could fix things and do things and everything else. And so, yeah, he came up in the winter. We were tearing down a cottage for him. And I said, do you find anybody to run it yet? He offered us the job.
Right now we're at Fred and Fuzzy's. It's like a little waterfront restaurant, bar, cantina.
That's correct, yes. It's part of the Little Sister Resort. And it's actually on the part of land that we bought back that was originally part of the resort. And then in 2001, we opened up Waterfront Bar and Grill.
So you guys own and run the resort part, right?
Correct, and our partners with Fred's family now. But yes, we have the resort and the bar and grill.
I bet you still have to do some carpentry work, right?
Oh, of course, in the wintertime, because we have 30 buildings, so there's always something that needs to be done. We keep plenty busy. About my third time around of shingling a building, I thought it's time to let someone else do our shingling.
There's something really therapeutic and mindless about that.
There is, and we still do it on some of the small ones. We do it ourselves, you're correct.
What's a big boat coming in here right now? It's right around sunset.
Right, that's a local cruise boat. It runs out of Sister Bay, and they take, I think it's 4 cruises a day. and they come in here, and then they go out for the sunset. We send a lot of people to them, and they send us a lot of people. It's good for both of our businesses, and it's a great way to see the county from the water, and they go past lighthouses, and they do a great job of narrating what you're seeing.
So right now we're on Sister Bay, right?
Correct. They call it Little Sister Bay. We're halfway between the Bay of Sister Bay and Ephraim, but we're actually in the town or village of Sister Bay is proper. We're looking onto the Bay of Green Bay. We're the thumb sticking out into Lake Michigan.
So can we see straight out into Lake Michigan from here?
No, we cannot. We will see what we're seeing. I didn't look to see if we see land across tonight. It's about 14 miles across. What you will see is Upper Michigan. So that's what we're looking at from this point.
Let's go back to the resort. You have cottages, cabins, a main lodge?
Correct. We have 22 different rentals. We have three different homes. We have six units that are apartments and chalets. They're like condominiums, but we don't call them that because we own them. And then we have everything from one to three-bedroom cottages spread out, some with fireplaces, some without, some with kitchenettes, some without.
Where we are right now, we're on the edge of basically a little forest. They're mostly in the woods?
About half and half. And then the back area or the away from the water side of our property is Bay Ridge Golf Course. So some of them are on overlooking Bay Ridge Golf Course.
And I imagine the people here and the people that come to you come back year after year, right? You have a huge repeat following.
Yes, we do. We laugh because one gentleman came for 49 years. And then he finally built a home up here. So he's no longer staying with us, but they're still great friends of ours and like that. But yeah, we have a lot of return customers.
And probably multi-generational, where people that came up as kids, now they come up as grown-ups bringing their kids.
And some of them are bringing their grandkids that were here with us our first years, yes.
Where would you eat breakfast?
That is across the road. We have a dining room. It's an old lodge. It's a really neat place. It has the exposed rafters in it yet.
Sounds like Dirty Dancing a little bit.
And the cedar walls. It's a great place, and that's where the people staying here mid-June into October.
That's your season.
Well, for breakfast. The season is actually, you know, end of April till November for staying in the cottages, but the breakfast time is basically mid-June through August.
Talk to us about your foreigners that you bring in from overseas. That's a great story.
Yes, we're very fortunate. We run about half and half, Americans and half international students. It's called the J-1 program, and they're able to come over for basically 3 months to work, and then they have 2 to 4 weeks, depending on the time, to travel and see our country. And, of course, most of them want to go to Chicago, New York, Disney World, Vegas, San Francisco, and those type of places on their time to travel.
And do you have some favorite countries where you like to bring the students from?
We do. And some of that is just because of time frames, when they can come. The Lithuanian kids, we love them. They can come early, but then they have to leave the middle of September. And the kids from Montenegro can come later, and we love them also. And then they can stay until October. So we try to split up with that, but we have Romanians, we have two from Jamaica this year, and we've had from Estonia, Bulgaria, Romania, Lithuania. Right now we have two from Uzbekistan.
Oh, wow. Do any of them ever then come back later when they graduate and some want to move here?
Yes. Most of them, when they come back, are coming as a visitor. Part of it's because of our lifestyle and our expenses compared to what they're doing in their own countries. Or some of them try to find someone to marry and get in that way. But we've had, I think three of ours have gone through the process and they've got the green cards and have become American citizens. And we've been fortunate. We were actually down for the ceremony. And it's a fantastic ceremony to see someone become a citizen.
Conversely, you've gone over there and visited the kids once they're back home, right?
Correct. We've done this three different times. We've gone to visit them and meet their families. And that's the greatest part about this is, you know, meet the mom who's happy that we've taken care of their kids for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, some of them, and then go to see their homes and their workplaces and see their country.
So you're almost like relatives in a way when you show up.
Definitely. They consider us their summer parents.
Very, very cute. Well, Greg, I got to let you go. Before we go, though, for further information. For further information, if somebody wanted to learn more.
Contact me, Fuzzy, at fredandfuzzies, with an S on the end, .com. And or just go to our website, fredandfuzzies.com, and you can see a lot of things there. We have our pictures there to show you of our wonderful water views and other activities going on at the Bar and Grill.
And overnight.
Right. If you do that, it's littlesisterresort.com. And that has virtual tours of all of our units. And there's also a map that shows you where they're located on our property. So you can get a very good idea of where we're located and what we have to offer. And my name is Fuzzy Sundstrom, one of the managers, owners of Little Sister Resort and Fred and Fuzzy's.
Excellent. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Michael Brennenstuhl, Door Artisan Cheese Company, along with Glacier Ledge Restaurant and Bar.
You own both of those operations?
Yes, yep. I am owner here at the facility. We are a two-year-old company. I'm a cheesemaker by trade, but our facility is a working artisan cheese plant with a high-end market for cheese and charcuterie and wine, and then we have a casual fine dining restaurant. Me, as a lifelong cheesemaker, in the business for 47 years. So what we set out to do is to create a full line of artisan cheeses. We are now up over 26 different varieties, and any cheeses ranging from an English cheddar to a Belgian-style Gouda to a baby Swiss to a Swedish Fontina. So we do a very broad spectrum of cheeses here.
In your sales and distribution, is it mostly people coming to you, or do you?
Mostly in the Midwest. We have our market sales, of course, but our goal is to expand regionally into distributors throughout the Midwest, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Chicago, Madison.
Look for the label Door Artisan Cheese.
Door Artisan Cheese, yep. Everything is our own private label. We do very little off-label for other customers, so we want our brand to grow through our label.
Is there a signature cheese, something that people first think of when they think of you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have a couple of signature cheeses. The first one is called Valmy. It's a tribute to the Belgian community immigrants that came to Wisconsin, especially northeastern Wisconsin. Valmy is a small town about 10 miles from Egg Harbor. But it happens to also house, at a time, a great deal of Belgian immigrants. And so I made a Belgian-style Gouda that is beer washed with a Belgian-style double chocolate milk stout beer.
Wow.
Then cave-aged.
We're going to have to go inside and taste one of those.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a one-of-a-kind cheese. So
you won't find it anywhere else.
You won't find it anywhere in the world except here. And then we have another one called Rosette, which is a aged Asiago that we soak in a red South African wine. Beautiful, beautiful cheese.
You have two parallel operations. Same building, you have a fine dining restaurant. So it follows that your cheese would be woven into that cuisine.
Oh, without a doubt. Well, we call it being cheese forward. A lot of our entrees utilize cheeses that we make in our cheese factory. Our chef, by the way, is from Southern California.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His name is Lawrence Hutchinson. Can you imagine a chef being able to go down and choose from 25 different artisan cheeses to create menu items? So he's kind of in a chef cheese heaven anyway.
Yeah, I bet. Give us a little taste of some of your, in the restaurant side, the signature dishes and meld cheese.
Absolutely. We talked about the Valmy cheese. We actually have an entree called Valmy Nachos, and one might think that might mean, oh, there's nacho chips in it. Mm. Not here. Everything is fresh made. What that entree is all about is we take some crispy, homemade cut cube potatoes, and then the chef actually takes some Brussels sprout leaves, and he oven bakes those to get them crispy. And then we melt this Valmy cheese over the top, and we call it Valmy Nachos.
Do you know that you're making me real hungry?
Well, you'll have a chance later on to try it. But another main performer, and we are an international menu, but we have a hanger steak over Mexican street corn that is by far our best seller. The chef takes a hanging tender cut, and he hand cuts it and grills it, cuts it into medallions, and then he lays it into a bed of roasted corn. And then the corn is actually made with a homemade mayonnaise and Parmesan cheese that I make in the plant. And it's just, I'm sure from California you've had Mexican street corn. Well, his is the best.
I can tell by the smile on your face that you have fun here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Chef has been with us from the beginning, and so we always work off of each other, because I always tell him, you know, I'm kind of a person that's an innovator coming up with all of these new cheeses. He's really not much different, you know. So
you work great together.
Yeah, we collaborate.
You mad scientists.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. We came up with a grilled cheese slider plate that we just came up with. So we have three different artisan cheeses that we make here. We make our own bread. We use our own baguettes. And he comes up with these unique grilled cheese items. So.
And when you say bread, that's a big subject.
Yeah.
What sort of signature bread do you have?
We always have our own French baguettes every day, but every day we integrate different cheeses into the breads. Today, our bakery chef made a Santa Fe cheddar, which is a Southwest seasoned cheddar with cilantro. Tomorrow, it might be a Swiss cheese with roasted red pepper. So every day we come up with a new French loaf.
It doesn't matter what day you come here, you're going to find something new and different and playful.
And fresh, mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you open year-round? This is your second year, right?
Second year. The restaurant was closed through the winter. It gets pretty quiet up here in Door County. Yeah. But we plan on being open on weekends.
Through the winter.
Through the winter, yes. And now it's 6 to 7 days a week.
Cherries. Have you melted cherries into your cheese?
Yes, we have. Okay. In fact, I just made some English cherry cheddar about 2 weeks ago. So it's going to be coming out of the cooler in the caves in just a few weeks. So it takes a good month for that cherry infusion. And these are actually Door County super dry cherries. So they have to kind of rehydrate in the cheese, but it's going to be a nice one.
That sounds great. That tartness, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and it is a tart cherry, but it's a nice combination.
Okay, if somebody wanted to learn more, the doggy wants some cheese. To learn more, your website, would that be the best place to go?
Yeah, you can find us on the web, doorartisancheese.com. Certainly we're on Facebook. Just, Google us up on Door Artisan Cheese. And we also have, besides our Door Artisan website, Glacier Ledge also has links and its own website for the fine dining. So plenty of opportunities, Facebook, and so we're pretty easy to find if you got access to a computer. My name is Mike Brennenstuhl.
Mike, thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
We're here with John George. John, you work for the county tourism?
Yes, the Door County Visitor Bureau, officially.
Uh-huh. Very cool. And you love what you do.
I do. I'm very fortunate to be able to represent an area like Door County.
We're in Wisconsin, and if you look at the map, the thumb that sticks out on the right is where we're at.
Yes, we're the thumb of Wisconsin sticking out into Lake Michigan, surrounded by water on three sides, 300 miles of shoreline, and it's kind of this maritime destination in the middle of the Midwest.
And you get to claim Green Bay.
We do. Green Bay lies off to the western side of our peninsula. It's all Lake Michigan, of course, but the Bay of Green Bay is a big bay that lies off the western coast, and Lake Michigan proper off our eastern coast.
So, as you know, the reason I came over today is your lighthouses, and they are legendary. They're on books, book covers, magazine covers, paintings around the world.
Yeah, we're lucky that we have 11 of them, and they obviously have been a critical part of our history, our maritime history here in Door County. The first one built back in 1836. Wow. So there's a long history of those lighthouses here, and we were founded by water, people that came here. That were not native to the area. That's how they got here, is by the water.
Because that was the highway of the day.
That was the highway of the day. And when you look at all the villages we have up here and the settlements, they were all in areas that had a safe harbor in some capacity.
So today, all of the lighthouses still operate and work, but they have all been automated. So you don't have to have a lighthouse keeper to change the oil, right?
Yeah, and to be clear, 10 of our 11 are still active aids to navigation. Our 11th one is private and hasn't been in service for over 100 years.
And that's the Birdcage one?
Yes, the Birdcage Lighthouse in Bailey's Harbor.
Yeah, and that's an old one.
Yeah, that was an old one built in the early 1860s.
And I understand that in the history of lighthouses, That was a disaster. It was a failure as a lighthouse. It caused wrecks.
Yes, that's sort of, it's, we can joke about it now. Yeah. But it was, yeah, the joke is that it caused more shipwrecks than it prevented. Mm-hmm. And but that actually was the reason why they built Cana Island Lighthouse, and that was built in 1869. And so it did bring us Cana Island, which is great.
So why did the Birdcage Lighthouse cause wrecks?
The location was horrible. And
so it would kind of, the mariners would misjudge based on where they saw the light,
yeah,
where to enter the harbor.
Exactly, based on the shoals that are there at the entrance to Bailey's Harbor. It was just, it was in a bad location, and it would direct people actually into the shoals instead of away from them. And so, yeah, that one didn't, it wasn't in service for too long.
Yeah. Okay, and you do, I remember we were at one this morning where it's still Coast Guard operated and owned.
Yes, the Sherwood Point Lighthouse, actually the last manned lighthouse on the Great Lakes. The light itself is automated, mm-hmm, but the station itself there and the lighthouse and the grounds are a retreat center, essentially, for active or retired military personnel.
So again, this is a cool place where you're active or retired military, you can stay there.
Yeah, it's a rental, essentially. You can go and you rent it for the weekend or for a week, and you get to stay there and sleep there, and you don't have to tend to the light. It tends itself.
What a fun getaway.
Yeah, it's a great spot. The setting is gorgeous. The location's beautiful, and it really is a special spot.
And I think the Coast Guard was telling me it's only $80 a night to rent the whole lighthouse.
Yeah, it's pretty reasonable. I mean, it's obviously not something that they're looking to make money off of. So
right now in the background, there's a big engine that just fired up, and that's because
we are on the Washington Island Ferry. We are in the process of crossing Death's Door here shortly, which gives Door County its name, as a matter of fact.
And that goes back to the French, right?
Yes. Well, it goes well beyond the French, but when the French fur traders and trappers first started coming to this area, they heard stories from the Native Americans that were here about how treacherous this little strait can be. It's at the tip of the peninsula where the Bay of Green Bay and Lake Michigan proper meet, and there's some shoals, and it can be a very tricky spot, and so a lot of shipwrecks in this stretch.
Yesterday, you and I went out on a boat shipwreck hunting, and we could see the shipwrecks, 120-year-old ships on the bottom of the lake. That's really cool.
It's amazing. We've got over 200 documented shipwrecks off the waters of Door County. Some that you can see, some that are too deep to see, but it's really all over the board. But a great for scuba divers that are experienced. They're all cold water dives here because the Great Lakes stay pretty chilly. But actually, that helps to keep the wrecks in pretty decent shape.
So this ferry boat we are on goes between the Door Peninsula and Washington Island. And Washington Island also has a fascinating history.
Yeah, Washington Island is it's one of our 34 named islands, the only island that has a year-round population, about 700 people. And the ferry that we're on right now is what connects the island to the rest of the world. There's no bridge. On a normal day, it's about a 30-minute ride across the Death's Door Water Passage. The island itself was, it's been settled. There was Native Americans certainly here, but it was one of the larger Icelandic settlements in the United States back in the 1800s. And so you'll still a lot of Scandinavian heritage and Icelandic heritage that you can see on the island.
And that happened because one guy came and then told his brother or friends back home.
Yeah.
And they kind of built that communal.
Yeah, they came over here, somehow found his way here, and it was in a lot of ways similar to what they had on Iceland in terms of the fishing culture and the being surrounded by water and everything there. So, and like you said, then, he wrote back home and, hey, this is a great spot. You should come on over. And that really kind of opened the floodgate, so to speak, and a lot more Icelanders managed to come over here in the late 1800s.
So even though a lot of the Icelandic immigrants have moved from the island, did they come back? Is there a Icelandic festival on the island?
I don't think there's an Icelandic festival per se.
Maybe there should be, huh?
There should be. But I know every once in a while they will bring Icelanders over, or, family members that will come over to visit, and they'll have a big family get together. A couple of years ago, a gentleman that wrote a book about Icelandic heritage and history was here, and there was a bunch of people that came over with him. And So there's been little things here and there that kind of help to bring that history alive.
So even though you have about 700 year-round residents, in the summertime you have a lot of people that have summer cottages here, right?
Yeah, a lot. The seasonal population certainly goes up.
Probably double.
Yeah, I would say at least that. But a lot of vacation homes on Washington Island. Tourism is certainly the main source of their economy.
So we came over this morning to Washington Island. We went to the other end of the island and got on another ferry boat. Tell us about that.
Sure. So if you drive to the opposite end of Washington Island from where the main car ferry lands, you'll hit Jackson Harbor. And that's, you take a smaller passenger-only boat from there, about a 10-minute ferry ride over to Rock Island State Park, one of our five state parks here in Door County, and really a gem. It's about 906 acres. It's a walking-only island. So there's no cars, no bikes, but they have some great backpack camping. The oldest lighthouse in Wisconsin on Lake Michigan.
That's the 1836.
Yeah, 1836. That's Pottawatomie Light Station. They have backpack camping and really a neat island.
In the tour, the lighthouse itself is really cool. It's like going back in time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. They've restored it, and they've added back the lantern room that was taken off sometime in the late 1980s. And it's open for daily tours from usually around Memorial Day until the first part of October every year. And docents live there, and their payment, so to speak, is having to give tours every day from 10 to 4 while they're staying in the lighthouse.
That's really cool. I imagine that a lot of people that from the Midwest and overseas, whatever, they come and find Door County, stay on the peninsula, have fun, and then they maybe make a day trip or even an overnight to Washington Island?
Yeah, we have a lot of folks that will come over to Washington Island for the day. But there's a lot of lodging options, so it's certainly places to stay overnight on Washington Island. And it's just a lot of neat stuff on Washington Island in and of itself. It's just another neat aspect of what Door County has to offer visitors.
Tell us about 2 years ago when you and I went out to Washington Island in January on an icebreaker ferry boat.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was neat. So the ferry line, again, is the lifeline for the islanders, and it runs every day of the year, weather permitting. And so right now they have one winter boat in their fleet. Death's Door does tend to freeze over every year, or at least have ice that moves in and out on a daily or every other day basis in the winter. And it can get a little chilly out here in the wintertime. And yeah, you and I had a great trip over on the winter boat. It's fun to be on a boat that's breaking through the ice. Their winter boat was designed to be an icebreaker, so the hull is reinforced and it's got everything to deal with the snow and ice that it deals with.
But one step further, they sometimes have to have an assist from the United States Coast Guard cutter, right?
Every once in a while, if the ice gets a little too thick and they can't bust through it, yeah, they may need to call the Coast Guard. Their newest winter boat, which was built in 2003, really took that out of the equation because it's so much more powerful and it's really designed for that. Prior to 2003, when they had their old winter boat, which was a lot smaller, they needed help a lot more from the Coast Guard back then.
And explain how an icebreaker ferry boat works, because as I understand it, it doesn't kind of plow into as much as almost climbs on top and crushes and stomps on the ice.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, that's sort of that's the goal, because it's a lot easier on the boat. Yeah, so it'll kind of ride up a little bit and then drop down onto the top from above on the ice to break it, and that's what helps it kind of break through. The other thing that they try to do, because they're doing two trips a day in the winter, so they try to use a similar channel that keeps it, at least there are going to be chunks there,
broken,
but at least
up, yeah.
It's broken up and it's a little easier to get through.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Back to Door County itself, as you know, I love it. I've been here too many times,
yeah,
but never enough, and they keep drawing me back. I know why I love it, but you know even better because you meet so many inbound tourists and vacationers. What makes Door County a distinctive and alluring attraction for people from around the state and around the Midwest?
Yeah, well, one of the things is we don't have many chain businesses, so chain restaurants, chain lodging. We have a few in Sturgeon Bay, our city in the southern part of the county.
I think you hit that one on the head, and that's why I love it. It's family-run resort. inns, restaurants, everything. Yeah, no, it's touching.
And it feels different because you don't see those types of places. And so when people are here, they really feel truly like they're somewhere else because of that. It's
a time warp. It's what you would have found in the 40s and 50s in America. Yeah. And that's mostly been destroyed and erased for most communities.
Yeah, and so I think that's certainly one of the draws. It just gives it a different feel. But then you add in some of the stuff that we have to offer. You know, obviously lighthouses that are available, but just some of the beaches and just some of the little small villages all have their own little vibe. And it's easy to kind of get lost in them and just get caught up with your family and having fun and sort of forgetting about the rest of the world for a day or a couple of days, you know.
And then back to the family, the multi-generational, not only of the operators, but of the people that are now their grandkids, that first, you know, their grandparents came here, they're coming here. And then you have those just iconic, the fish boil. That's cool.
Yeah, we have some fun things like that you just don't necessarily see in other places.
Describe a fish boil, just kind of what makes it special.
Sure, so it's a Scandinavian tradition that uses locally caught whitefish. It's a fish that there's probably half a dozen families that still commercial fish in Door County. And they'll take these whitefish and cut them up into steaks. And so it's not a fillet, but and they throw them, fish boils are cooked outdoors in a big cauldron or big pot over a wood fire, and usually it's cooked with the whitefish, potatoes, and onions. And it takes about a half hour to cook, and the boil master, which is what we call the cook or the chef, you know, usually out there telling the story a little bit about the history of the fish boil, getting in a fish joke or two perhaps. And then the culmination of the cooking process is the photo moment. It's called the boil over. And what happens during the cooking process is the soot and maybe some of the fish oil gathers on the top of that pot. And to get that off of the pot before they pull the food out, they throw kerosene on the fire underneath the pot, which causes a huge fireball, and it superheats the water and boils the pot over, which takes all the dirt and maybe soot a little bit on the top over the side. And it's a photographic moment.
Yeah, and I got a couple of classics. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to the family dynamic, Rowley Bay, that place. Another one, I know it's hard. I don't want to put you on the spot playing favorites, but one of my favorites was Fuzzy.
Yeah, Fred and Fuzzy's Waterfront Bar and Grill. Cute little hole-in-the-wall sort of place that's gotten a huge following because they just had such a great spot. Outdoors, literally right on the water, amazing sunsets. They serve great Door County cherry margaritas, among other things. And it's just a fun spot, relaxing, kind of a fun, relaxing vibe. And again, you throw the sunset in there on a gorgeous night, and it's just a magical location and a great setting.
Yeah, it really is. Before we go, I want to loop back to the ferry boat that we're on. This is a community-serving, a life-serving ferry boat system, and it's family-owned.
Yeah, it's family-owned, and it really does serve the community of Washington Island. It's the lifeblood of the island. Anything that comes and goes, there's no bridge, you can't drive in the winter on the ice or anything like that. So this ferry, everything, it's a lifeblood. And
that's pretty rare in America. Most all are municipal or regional or state run, like the Washington State Ferry System.
Yeah, the Washington Island Ferry, it's a family-run deal. They get no government subsidies or anything. So it's a private business, but they've been so good to the island that they obviously employ a lot of islanders. And it's been a great addition. And they're doing really well, so much so that they just announced a new boat that they're going to be building. So that's very exciting. It's going to be a second winter boat. So they'll be able to use it all year, but it's going to have winter capabilities with a reinforced hull and extra horsepower engine room and all that stuff.
And more car carrying.
Yeah, and it's going to be the biggest boat in the fleet. And so it's going to be great now to have two winter boats should something happen to one of them. They don't have to worry about being down. It's just going to be another nice addition to the fleet.
That's so cool.
I will add, another cool aspect of Door County is they can build that new boat right here in Sturgeon Bay at our shipyard. So it's really cool that we have a shipbuilding heritage in Sturgeon Bay, and it's just neat to be able to keep it all right here in Door County.
And Sturgeon Bay's maritime building enterprise goes back 100 years more. You guys built a lot of the vessel for World War II here.
Yeah, we had a huge shipyard community. It was over 10,000 workers that were just working in the shipyards during World War II. And a lot of great information about it still can be found at the Door County Maritime Museum in Sturgeon Bay.
Okay. One-stop shopping for further information is?
DoorCounty.com is your spot for all sorts of great information about Door County.
John Jarvis, thanks for sharing.
My pleasure. Good to have you up here as always, Tom.
I can't wait to come back. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Door County, Wisconsin. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.